Hello, everyone. This week, you have a video that's been voted on by the wonderful folks on Patreon. They wanted to know about some of the weirder and wackier Wunderwaffe, or should it be Wunderwaffe, of the Kriegsmarine in World War II. So I began drawing up a short list and then eliminating projects that, while they may not have come to fruition, in and of themselves weren't actually a terrible idea. Things like, you know, the Graf Zeppelin and the various other German carrier projects. Yeah, they obviously didn't work out, and yes, they weren't necessarily the wisest choice for Germany particularly, but the idea of building an aircraft carrier is not in and of itself a wacky idea. And likewise, most of their hypothetical surface ship designs, while not realised and in some cases having some weaknesses, were not in concept some weird and terrible thing. And in the few flights of fancy that did come about, the latter H-type battleships, for instance, well, I've already covered them in the video on Plan Z. And that meant if we want to stick with the Kriegsmarine, we're actually pretty much restricted to mostly underwater stuff. There is one above-water craft on this list, but everything else spends at least some of its time underwater by design. You can thank Goering's ruthless control of anything that flew for the fact that Kriegsmarine doesn't have specific wacky air weapons. So, starting out with our surface candidate, this is the Tornado project. And yes, that is in fact a V1 pulse jet mounted on a craft of some description, but let's go into a little bit more depth on it. This came about in 1944, when an engineer thought, I've got an idea that will save us resources because, well, torpedoes, although they are expendable weapons, are still relatively large, complex, and expensive. And particularly in the Mediterranean, where the Germans were fighting a retreat through Italy, they had a large number of Mars boats that the Italians had left behind or that the Germans had taken over. But the limited supply of torpedoes that they had available for them was a bit of a concern. So to try and save the torpedoes for really valuable targets, he thought, well, against the less valuable, less important targets, you know, small escorts, freighters, landing craft, just a big floating bomb ought to do enough damage to make them sink or at least cripple them so they can be finished off by other weapons. But to close the distance from detection range to impact quickly enough that you wouldn't just get blown out of the water by the Allied escort guns, maybe cruisers and such like, you needed to move pretty darn quickly. Luckily, the Argus pulse jet, as used on the V1, was cheap, cheerful, and provided a lot of thrust. And the Kriegsmarine thought, well, this seems like a good idea. We could maybe convert Mars boats we can't otherwise use, but let's test it out back in Germany. That led to Sprengboote Tornado, as you can see here, which was very much a lash-up consisting of two floats taken from a Ju-52M transport, but yes, they did actually make a Ju-52 in seaplane version. And those two floats were joined together at the back by the pulse jet engine, as you can see, and then up front, along with the warhead and the detonator rails, was a small command cabin and then a radio control antenna, because unlike some Japanese ideas on explosive motorboats, the Germans tended to adopt the more Italian approach of actually letting the crew get away. Although in the Italian case, you just bailed out the back at the last minute when you thought your boat was on course. In the German method, being a somewhat later in the war technique, they would line the boat up, roughly speaking, the direction of the target, leave the boat in a controlled manner, and then remote control it as it rushed in. But in testing, there turned out to be a bit of a problem. Having a high-mounted, high-strength power plant, coupled with what was essentially a catamaran design with extremely shallow draft, meant that the thing was only capable of staying on course, no matter what you did, in very calm seas, and as it got up to speed, even the slightest disruption could see it skidding around and going wildly off course. And when the words twitchy, sensitive, and prone to running off in its own direction are associated with the term three-quarter-ton bomb with pulse jet attached, yeah, you really don't want to carry that forward. Oddly enough, it turned out reverting to the basic idea that had spawned the whole thing was actually better, because right at the very end of the war, They found that if you stuck a pulse jet on a fairly standard high-speed motorboat hull, as seen here, the stability and control issues mostly went away. It still wasn't the easiest of things to steer, but it could now keep on course in sea states greater than a flat calm. And thus sticking pulse jets to ex-Mars boats would actually have been viable, but, well, clues in the name, end of the war, it never got off the ground, either figuratively or literally, although the literal one would have been a little bit more of a complication. And in the end, both prototypes appear to have been destroyed with the end of the war, although whether that was by sabotage, by bombing, or by the Allies not really understanding what they were, depends on your source. Someone actually did try to recreate such a thing after the war, but, well, the less said about that, the better. Now, you're probably expecting the hydrofoil Schnellboote to pop up at some point or other in this video, and, well, apart from this very brief mention, they're actually not, because while very novel for World War II, hydrofoils are in and of themselves not a terrible idea. Well, they might not be quite so suitable for combat vessels, but as an idea for a fast surface vessel in general, it's relatively sound. But there's also another reason, and never fear those who want to hear about hydrofoils, because, well, the Germans really took this concept up to 11. Behold the glorious madness of the submersible hydrofoil fast attack torpedo boat. Yes, you heard that right. This is essentially a Schnellboote that's begging for the sweet mercy and release of death, because its design has started off with a relatively sane Schnellboote hull, but then to conceal it from view, they decided, well, we'll make it submersible. You can see there's a periscope up top, even though there's also a flak veerling, presumably very heavily marinized, on the back as well. This would allow it to sneak around, using the hull-mounted propeller you can see at the center left there. But, of course, this runs into a problem, which is that underwater a Schnellboote is not particularly fast, so it could find a target but couldn't necessarily catch it. Well, that's where the hydrofoils come in. Now, of course, you couldn't travel very fast underwater anyway if you have hydrofoils attached, because if you do, you'll start generating lift and pop up back out of the water. But the idea of this was basically to sneak or even float around, almost like just a bobbing mine with just about steerage way maintained. And then when you see your target, you motor on forward, the hydrofoils lift you out of the water, and now you're running really, really, really fast as a hydrofoil, whereupon you can deliver your torpedo attacks and possibly even submerge again to hide if the enemy has air support. But if that wasn't enough, that concept was then developed into, yeah, what's essentially a hydrofoil U-boat, having come to some of the same conclusions that we just have about the underwater speed profile of a Schnellboote hull. They decided to modify the general concept and just go full on, here's a small U-boat, which will motor around with a big hydrofoil section underneath it, and again, act more as a kind of floating minefield than an actively hunting sub until a target comes along. And then, yeah, you'd be treated to the sight of a flying U-boat coming at you before it fires its torpedoes and then disappears. I mean, there would be, I suppose, the propaganda effect of no one's really going to believe you if you said yes, and then suddenly a small U-boat came flying across the sea above the water and torpedoed us. There are some indications that even smaller units based on some German midget subs were also planned, so yes, you could also have had hydrofoil midget subs, but it doesn't appear that anybody really took all these plans that seriously. So they remained, for the most part, on the drawing board, although a number of hull tank models and so forth were also built. Semi-related to this is the Engelmann boat, which, confusingly, also has the designation VS5, which is shared with some of the Schnellboote developments. And as you can see, this is a semi-submersible idea, essentially a kind of almost Whitehead torpedo-style hull, considerably larger than a torpedo or even a Schnellboote. It's really more of a mini submarine, except not submarine, because the upper portion is supposed to stay above water. The idea of this was to allow what was still a relatively small vessel to be somewhat more stable at sea, because a lot of it was underwater, while being able to move through the water pretty quickly, but without having to have all the extraneous gear that a true submarine would need to dive. At 150 feet long, it was thought the craft might be able to reach speeds of 45 to 50 knots, at least until they built a prototype and took it up to speed, where they discovered the control surfaces were pitifully insufficient compared to the torque of the motor. By the time it reached the high 20s of knots, it was listing rather interestingly. Not dangerously, because it was obviously sealed up, but it made it much harder to control when you were in a permanent lean. But then when you got up to the mid-30s of knots, it became essentially uncontrollable because it was now skidding along effectively on its side, and the rudder and the small control planes had essentially switched roles. Now, a bigger rudder, a droppable keel blade, or two smaller propellers contra-rotating might have solved these issues. But with many, many other projects competing for funding, this one slipped away into obscurity and VS5 became far more associated with a prototype Walter submarine. And that brings us on to another rocket-involved project, although this time it's not rocket-powered, it's rocket-firing, specifically rocket-firing U-boats. The Germans came up with a number of ideas in this regard. At first, they thought about adapting existing army rockets from various rocket launchers like the Nebelwerfer into some kind of weapon that could be mounted either on or adjacent to a submarine's hull. Why would you do this, you might ask? Well, being that they were self-contained in terms of fuel, you could light them off underwater. And the idea, at first at least, was that this would give the U-boat some kind of weapon that they could use against convoy escorts, this being in a period before the acoustic homing torpedo. And of course, even compared to an acoustic homing torpedo, the rocket would cross the distance considerably quicker. Unfortunately for the idea, since these were unguided rockets and you were launching them from a U-boat that would still have some pitch and roll even underwater, and potentially would have considerably more pitch and roll as more and more rockets were fired and the balance of the U-boat was upset, it turned out the prospect of using such things against moving targets was pretty much slim to none, and they would only ever be useful in hitting something the size of land. But even then, the prospect of you doing a lot of expensive adaptations to a U-boat, especially adaptations that, thanks to drag and weight, would affect its ability to operate as a conventional submarine against shipping, in exchange for getting a rather minimal capability to bombard something over there, because accuracy still wasn't brilliant, was considered a bad deal and the idea was dropped. Very briefly, shortly thereafter, there was the idea of mounting V1 flying bombs to U-boats, with the idea of then being able to take them to areas offshore of targets that the V1s couldn't reach from their launch sites in northern France. Goering is mostly responsible for this idea not really getting off the ground because, well, the V1 belonged to the Luftwaffe, not to the Kriegsmarine, and he wasn't going to let it go. So, unlike post-war tests, where, for example, the US Navy used a number of retro-engineered V1s to launch from all sorts of things, including submarines, and indeed would use that as the basis for the Regulus cruise missile, the Germans only ever really thought about the concept. They never actually tried to implement it. Instead, they went with a hop, a skip, and a jump straight on to trying to develop a kind of world's first ballistic missile submarine, specifically a submarine that could launch V2 rockets. Now, the concept of this was somewhat different from the ballistic missile subs that we know from the Cold War. For one thing, the V2 in its various formats was in no way, shape, or form small enough to fit into even the largest U-boat. And more to the point, I think most U-boat crews would have mutinied at the prospect of hauling around one or more missiles with the rather volatile liquid fuels that a V2 used. Never mind that the V2 was also a notoriously finicky weapon prone to exploding on launch, failing to launch and torching everything around it, or launching a very short distance, then turning around and coming straight back down again. Instead, the marginally less suicidal idea was to use a floating container in which a single V2 would be encapsulated. This would then be towed behind a U-boat, and within the container would be ballast tanks, rudders, a gyroscopic stabilizing system, and fuel tanks. Towing this, or possibly multiples of this, across the Atlantic or to northern parts of Britain, or wherever it was you happened to want to launch said rocket, the U-boat would then have to surface, the container would be detached, it would pump out ballast tanks in its forward section, which would then become the upper section as it then bobbed upright. And yes, that means that as well as the bumps and travels of being towed along, all of that wonderful, extremely volatile rocket fuel would then be being sloshed up 90 degrees. Then three incredibly brave men would have to row in a small dinghy over to the container, where they would operate the fueling system, fuel the missile up, prime it for launch, and then presumably row extremely fast back to the mother U-boat, which would, I would reckon, dive as deep as humanly possible before the rocket lit off. The V-2 would then, in theory, assuming it hadn't dissolved itself en route, launch itself into the sky and head off in something vaguely resembling the direction of its target, to the great bemusement and befuddlement of all. Despite the clear problems with this solution, not to mention the fact that both U-boat and container would have to be on the surface for at least half an hour in close proximity to the enemy coast in order to conduct the launch procedure, which I'm sure Coastal Command or the US equivalent would have had something to say about, the Germans actually took this relatively seriously and developed various prototype units, although they never actually managed to conduct a full test firing before the Peenemünde facility was overrun and the war ended. Now we move on to manned torpedoes. Now, the thing is, manned torpedo in the World War II context can refer to any number of things. You've got the maiale and the chariots from the Italians and the British, respectively, which look like torpedoes with little harnesses on top, but are in reality more a kind of externally ridden submersible, which happens to carry a warhead for sabotage purposes. Then you have the Kai-10s, which are literally manned torpedoes. There is a man inside, he is the guidance system, and he goes with it to the end. Those, of course, unsurprisingly, are the Japanese. And then you have the German family of piloted torpedoes. These were developed by the so-called Kleiner Kampfverbände, or small battle units, which was a unit of the Kriegsmarine founded when it became clear the battles might be coming closer and closer to German-held territory and then Germany itself. And this consisted of a family of three types in sequential order of development, because one came from the other: Neger, Marder, and Hai. Now, for, I hope, obvious reasons with the name of that first one, I'm just going to refer to them as German manned torpedoes 1, 2, and 3, or 1st, 2nd, and 3rd development, because I don't want to get banned by YouTube because it misunderstands what I'm saying. The first variant was actually incredibly simple. You took two G7E torpedoes, and from one you removed the warhead and stuck what turned out to be a Dornier bomber's nose bubble on top, and stuck a pilot in with links to the control surfaces. You then slung the normal, unmodified torpedo under the first one, and the pilot could then motor around for a few hours, although the very earliest versions didn't even have the dome, as the idea was for the thing to run at the surface, but it turned out wave action, even if you had goggles on, made it almost impossible to see, hence the addition of the dome rather quickly. While simple and to a certain extent practical, they did run into a few issues. The fact that your viewpoint was a foot or two above the water's surface meant that finding a target was actually very difficult because you couldn't see very far. Conversely, the rather shiny Perspex dome tended to reflect any light, whether that be sunlight or moonlight, and made it rather easy to see. An attempt was made to make the craft submersible as opposed to a kind of semi-submerged surface attack craft, but it turned out that made the whole thing unstable, so it would just have to be used as it was. The second iteration of the idea tried to fix these problems by lengthening the carrying unit ever so slightly, which would allow for the installation of a balanced set of small ballast tanks, which would give the whole thing the ability to dive for a short period of time, a little under half an hour. also the torpedo underneath the launch vehicle, although it was still outwardly the same, had had much of its internal stripped away. This made it a somewhat shorter range device, but also made it lighter, thus improving overall performance. The first iteration, which had had some units built already, was used first to try and attack the Allied landings at Anzio in Italy. That was something of a debacle. No successful hits were scored on Allied ships. Most of the units got lost or failed to launch in the first place, and several pilots died of asphyxiation, one of whom was found circling gently outside the Allied landing zone, so the Allies captured it and then knew what the Germans had prepared. Use of other units off the Normandy beaches were fractionally more successful in that they did actually succeed in hitting some Allied targets, although the losses were even higher on the German side as a percentage of overall units launched. Use of the second iteration was actually less successful than the first generation. Although they were technically more capable, the fact was that the very limited visibility afforded by their very low height above the water meant that consistently attacks were spotted coming in due to the sunlight reflecting off the Perspex dome, which meant that even when they dived to get away from the inevitable Allied gunfire, highly practiced Allied escorts started dropping lots of depth charges, and so various attacks off the Italian coast ended in complete failure. The last generation of the system had the carrier unit get even longer, move the cockpit amidships, because, well, they were adding lots of extra room, and switched out the torpedo for, depending on your source, either a low-speed, long-range Dachshund torpedo, a variant of the G7E, or a Zaukonig acoustic homing torpedo. The idea was that this longer carrier unit would have a little bit more autonomy than the previous two generations, and of course the longer range and optionally homing torpedoes could be launched at longer distances as well. However, it seems that tests of this unit didn't go particularly well, and so it never actually was used in combat. Despite in theory not being a suicide weapon, as you were supposed to launch the torpedo and then get away, this really wasn't a very effective weapons platform, as in the year or so that the various options were in use, they launched just over 250 of the devices, of which 150 pilots never came back, either just disappearing, asphyxiating, or in some of the more merciful cases, being killed by depth charges or Allied gunfire. So, not a brilliant plan. And that brings us on to something slightly larger, if only just. Witness the Schwertwal, literally sword whale, but more directly orca, killer whale. This thing is best described as a Walter engine-powered fighter of the sea. It's a very, very, very small mini-sub, as you can probably tell by the size of the torpedo slung underneath it, manned by just two men, who live in a small compartment just forward of the hydroplanes, because about three quarters of this thing is just one massive 10-ton fuel tank. And then at the very back, just aft of the rear end of the torpedo, is the engine system. With a predicted range of somewhere between 50 and 100 miles and an operational top speed of between 35 and 40 knots, you can understand why they didn't include a periscope, because it would be essentially pointless motoring along at that speed underwater. And outside of point defensive harbours, the idea for this thing was presumably to be either towed by a Schnellboote or perhaps mounted on the back of a U-boat to an area where it could operate more closely to the enemy coast, whereupon it would be launched. It would spin its motors up and go zooming off under the sea at extremely high speed. Assuming that some catastrophic failure of the hydrogen peroxide fuel system didn't immediately immolate everybody inside, it could in theory dodge straight past almost any escort, and it could even give some slower moving aircraft problems, not because it could outrun them, but simply because if they started an attack run, they might find themselves ending up their attack run somewhat behind their target, having underestimated just how quick the thing could go. It was supposed to be able to carry a pair of G7 type torpedoes mounted underneath, although I think the only way this weapon could be in any way practical is if they were carrying the Zaukonig homing torpedoes, because frankly, with basic manual controls and that level of visibility, there's no way they're going to be able to accurately aim this thing at an enemy ship at anything other than the closest of ranges. Whereas getting somewhere in the general vicinity and direction and then dropping off a pair of acoustic homing torpedoes might well result in a hit. Unlike many of the systems we've been discussing, this not only underwent some trials, but they were actually relatively successful. The only problem was the trials happened the month before the war ended in April 1945, and so after those trials it was scuttled. But the idea of a couple of Germans in this small mini sub running around underwater going the German equivalent of zoom is very amusing. And then to wrap us up, we're going to look at the tracked U-boats. And yes, your eyes don't deceive you. That is a mini submarine with a pair of tank tracks attached to it. Why, you might ask, were they doing this? Well, there was a small element of logic to the reasoning. This is the Seeteufel, or Sea Devil. It's a derivative of the Seehund, or Sea Hound. So if you've ever seen a Seehund mini sub, you might be thinking, isn't this a Seehund with tracks slapped onto it? Yeah, pretty much. So the Germans had a whole slew of miniature submarine projects of varying scales and sizes. And in fact, that was probably one of their major downsides, was the fact they were looking into what could potentially have been a fairly useful avenue of combat for them, except that they ended up making dozens and dozens and dozens of separate projects instead of deciding to pursue a few of them. Now, quite why they slapped tracks on a Seehund is still debated amongst historians. Some have suggested it was to allow the sub to move along the ocean bed to more carefully and precisely place demolition charges and so forth, or to go after obstacles like block ships and such. Others have suggested that this would allow the sub to leave and enter the water apart from port facilities, thus allowing, relatively speaking, easy maintenance. It was a rather small craft after all. And still others have suggested a more tactical use, in that it could perhaps sail along to near where there was an Allied ASW perimeter, then exit the water, trundle along what was presumably therefore still either friendly territory on land, or potentially so far behind enemy lines that, you know, Allied rear echelon troops probably wouldn't take the idea of a U-boat manoeuvring down the hedgerows very seriously, and then re-enter the water in a protected harbour and fire its two torpedoes. I'll leave you to make your own mind up about which one you believe, but nonetheless, the Seeteufel was obviously somewhat less capable than the Seehund, because, well, its underwater form was okay, but it was now lugging this massive pair of tracks around with it. But the main reason they decided not to progress with the whole thing turned out to be that, well, the tracks were relatively small and tightly spaced beneath the hull, which gave them a fairly high ground pressure and made the whole thing very unstable. And the last thing you wanted to do once you've brought your U-boat out onto a regular street was for it to topple over, because there was a slight gradient. But one final design, which certainly wouldn't have had stability problems on land, although you can question the stability of its designer, was this thing, the Manta. Yeah, that's certainly something. It may come as a surprise to absolutely no one to discover that this was designed by the wonderfully inventive mind of Helmuth Walter, of, you know, Walter hydrogen peroxide engine fame. And yes, this thing was powered by Walter hydrogen peroxide engines, which were stored in the two outriggers, because this is a wheeled catamaran submersible torpedo attack craft. Yeah, there's the little command section. You've got 8 torpedo tubes, 4 forward and 4 aft, in the catamaran wings. They can also be configured to fire mines instead. And then you've got these two outriggers, and at the bottom, obviously, a pair of Walter turbines. It's supposed to weigh about 50 tons. 35 tons of that is the torpedoes and all the fuel that's going to be burning to motor along at extremely high speeds on the surface, projected to be up to maybe 50 knots. Then it could dive, and it was expected to do about 30 knots underwater. And as you can see, it's got a sort of a little hydrofoil type arrangement going between the two outriggers to give it lift when it needs to get moving quickly on the surface. The wheels in this case definitely aren't for maneuvering around underwater. What they seem to have been for was to allow this thing to be stored much like a overly large vehicle on land, and then it could just wander down to a little slipway and motor off merrily into the sunset. Whether or not this would have worked at all hydrodynamically is up in the air, because they didn't actually get around to testing it before the war ended, even as a model, but it's certainly an interesting idea. And that wraps up our look at some of the weirder and wackier of the Kriegsmarine's Wunderwaffe from the Second World War. If you can think of others that you'd like to have covered in more detail, then let us know in the comments below, and I hope to see you again in another video soon.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.